I'd like to call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum for Environment Policy and Oversight Committee for February 10th. We are, first of all, going to approve the minutes from the last meeting on February 5th. Representative Hanson.
I move the minutes from the February 5th meeting.
Representative Hanson moves the minutes for the February 5th meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Today we're going to be picking up where we left off last week with Representative Knuth's bill on children, protecting children from toxic chemicals and products. And Representative Knuth is here today. We had to put it on hold because we had to wait for the Health Committee to take action, which they have done. So, Representative Knuth, I understand that you have a delete all amendments as well. And first of all, I guess we do have to move the bill to get it before us. So, Representative Bigham.
I will move House File 250 to go to Environment, Commerce and Labor, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Bigham moves that House File 250 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. And Representative Knuth, you also have a delete all amendment, and I will move this amendment, the HO 250 DE4 amendment. And Representative Knuth, if you would want to explain that amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I don't know if you want me to explain the whole bill again, but I thought I'd just explain the changes that the DE4 amendment does. The first one is it changes the section of law, which is kind of a technical thing but needed to happen for several reasons. But the main changes is that first it makes the exemptions clear. Under children's products, on the definition of children's products, you'll see that food, pharmaceutical products, and medical devices are not included in this. And then it also makes clear that this does not apply to agricultural chemicals, so those exemptions are more explicit in the bill. It requires publishing the chemicals of high concern and the priority chemicals on a website, on the PCA website. We took the concern of the Chemistry Council, and we're not requiring them to report the amount of chemical in a product, just whether or not it's present. And I asked for their testimony, but I didn't receive it, but that one stuck out as something that we could do. It changes the certificate of compliance having to be on file rather than having to be asked for if there's a violation suspected. It makes sure that it's clear that retailers can sell existing stock if they can prove the stock was in their possession prior to the product with the high priority chemical in it being phased out. And then it also allows for rulemaking for high priority chemicals. So those are the major changes. And I could go through the bill again, but I would also stand for questions. I kind of look for directions from you.
Okay. Any questions at this point? Or you can just take a vote now to put the bill in the shape that the author would like and then have further discussion on the delete all amendment after that. Seeing no further discussion or questions on it, I will once again renew the motion that the DE4 amendment be passed. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. And any questions on the bill as amended or any discussion at all? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, do you know if, or Representative Knuth, do you know if MPCA has gotten back to you with a fiscal note yet?
I have not gotten a fiscal note. We changed it significantly, and we will be having a fiscal note. I'm going to request one after this committee. We're discussing the policy. I still have another policy committee, possibly. I think just one more policy committee, and then we'll be going into the finance. So I will be having a fiscal note.
Yes, Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Knuth, so it's your intention to bring it to Representative Wagenius's environment Finance Committee, and at that time we'll have a discussion centered around...
I think, Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I think it also has to go to Representative Clark's committee, so it'll be going through at least a couple Finance Committees before it's done.
Mr. McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Knut, I happen to serve on both of those, so that's good. But will you not be before those committees before we have a fiscal note? I'm just curious. Are you going to go to those committees, and are we going to be voting on it there without a fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I would like to have a fiscal note by then, and I'll work with the agency to do it. We have another policy committee before we get there, so we've got a few more stops along the way.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on the bill as amended? Anyone want to testify to the changes? We've already had significant testimony on the bill itself in an earlier hearing, but are there any comments or testimony that wants to be given to the changes that were in the delete all amendments? Seeing none and seeing no further discussion or questions, Representative Bigham.
Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion that House File 250 as amended recommended to pass and move to the Commerce and Labor Committee.
Okay, Representative Bigham renews her motion that House File 250 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr.
So it's passed. So thank you, Representative Knut. Next, Representative Gardner. House File 403. Representative Gardner, if you'd like to move the bill and get it before us.
Mr. Chair, my procedure is a little rusty since last year. I think I'll move the bill and then move my author's amendment.
Okay.
I'd like to move House File 403 that would be recommended to pass and then move to the Committee on Commerce and Labor.
Okay. First, we'll move that House File 403 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor. And next, Representative Gardner moves the A1 amendment for technical changes to the bill. That's, again, just to get the bill in the shape and form that Representative Gardner would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. And Representative Gardner to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly about the... author's amendment that it removed the words or container or containers from the bill. It also inserts the word plastic before bag just to avoid any confusion with other types of bags. Mr. Chair, I also have an oral amendment to delete Section 3. I've talked with the MPCA and they have initiated a rulemaking discussion, or they're on the cusp of beginning a rulemaking process. I just found out yesterday to do exactly what's in Section 3. So I would like to move that an oral amendment that we delete Section 3 and then renumber the references and so on in Section 4.
Representative Gardner moves that we remove Section 3 and Section 4. I implement the corrective language. So,
to do that, Mr. Chair, we also need to change on line 224 and make it section 1 to 2 are effective today following final enactment.
Okay, thank you. And so on 224, sections 1 to 2 are effective. So change 3 to 2. All those in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What button do I hit? This left now? Get on the screen. Excellent. Mr. Chair, this is a bill I brought up in a different form about 2 years ago, and it really wasn't ready at the time, but I think that it is time this year. This bill is actually in two parts. Section one has to do with this committee's jurisdiction relating to yard waste. Section two has to do with truth in labeling regarding compostable and biodegradable bags, and that will be the subject of discussion for Representative Dabney's Committee on Labor and Consumer Affairs, since it relates to retailers and product labeling. And then it would need to go to civil justice also after that for the civil penalty. So the focus of today's hearing would be on Section 1. The reason for bringing this bill up is because we have a real untapped opportunity to reduce carbon emissions and to develop the budding bioplastics industry here in Minnesota as it relates to compost. And I always get some strange looks from people when I use the word compost, because they think I'm talking about something related to animal waste. But in fact, compost is soil, which is created from the processing of organic waste that we generate in our homes and businesses. The reason for this bill today is to promote more composting, and it helps reduce carbon emissions, extends the life of our municipal solid waste landfills. It's actually the fastest way to create new soil. It will help build our budding bioplastics industry here in the state, and it can also save consumers money over time while they reduce their output of garbage. In terms of carbon emissions, the Climate Change Advisory Group identified in the final recommendation that a 15% composting rate in Minnesota for not just yard waste but other types of compostable material would reduce our carbon emissions by a net 643,000 tons of carbon equivalent. It also reduces the potential for the creation of methane. We've prohibited the disposal of yard waste in our landfills for the last 20 years for several reasons. One is to extend the life of landfills, but the other is to avoid the creation of methane, which is 20 times more potent than CO2 at absorbing heat. It also is an explosive hazard, so landfills are required to either vent it or flare it off where they can't capture it for use in energy. Composting also fits our state solid waste goals. State policy in the Minnesota Statute 115A states that it's preferred that instead of landfilling land, that we reduce our land disposal needs of municipal solid waste by reducing, reusing, and recycling and composting solid waste. Interestingly enough, about one-third of our waste stream right now is non-recyclable paper and other compostable organic waste, not just yard waste, so we could actually make a fairly big dent in the material that we're sending to our landfills. Composting is the fastest way to make new soil. It takes 500 years to create an inch of new topsoil. The United States loses roughly 4 billion tons a year of topsoil to places like the Gulf of Mexico and elsewhere. Finished compost actually has a market. This isn't just an environmental issue. Landscapers as well as engineers and construction companies actually use finished compost. Forgot my visual aids. I can bore you to tears with what we you can use it for not just landscaping but erosion control. It actually is more effective at reducing runoff than silt fence or sod, but I won't bore you with all the details. I was very interested to see that Minnesota has a budding bioplastics and compost industry. We do have manufacturers of compostable plastics here in Minnesota, including NatureWorks, which is a company that was set up by Cargill and another company there in Minnetonka, NatureTech in Circle Pines. Cortec is here today. They're in White Bear Lake with a manufacturing facility in Cambridge. Up North Plastics and National Checking. National Checking is a distributor. There are some downstream uses of the material. There's a company called Windscapes in Inner Grove Heights that has blower trucks where you put in compost and grass seed and actually use the blower truck to blow this stuff over a landscaped area so you can help reseed right away. And one of the best projects was along Highway 61 when it was rerouted on the North Shore. They just hit rock where they had to grow vegetation to keep the whole cliff from eroding into the lake, and so they actually used compost stocks, which are similar to fancy pantyhose, I guess. You blow the compost in there, and then it acts as a soil barrier, like silt fence, and then you blow the soil with the grass seed mixed in so that it feeds and holds the land in. The problem here, and the reason for this bill, is that finished compost, like you see on the table there, sells, but compost that's contaminated with plastic does not. And that we've been successful at keeping yard waste out of landfills, but the material is of relatively low value because it's got parts of plastic in it. This is a worst-case scenario where you have plastic bags at a yard waste site. This material doesn't sell, but taxpayers end up kind of footing the bill and managing the land and having to clean it out. I actually have a... This is actually the bad bucket of compost. This is what compost looks like at yard waste sites when they are not able to get the bags out. And that's going around. Composting can also save money. In suburban Hennepin County, several communities, including Wayzata, are collecting not just the yard waste, but compostable food waste and non-recyclable paper. I was disappointed that Representative Burns is not here this year. He was actually one of my big cheerleaders for this because he was on the Wayzata City Council when they approved going to the curbside collection of food waste and non-compostable paper. Because he said he actually saved money by doing that. He reduced the size of his garbage can, he increased his recycling, and didn't have to pay tax on the composting and the recycling. Haulers have complained of many years for having to pay high tip fees to get rid of yard waste with plastic bags in it. I've heard one case of $12 per ton higher to get rid of that kind of material, and in theory, if they had the plastic bags out of there, they would pass on the savings to consumers. Representative Hoppe always asks, why do we need this in law? I call this the Hoppe test. Why is state action necessary? I reflect on Thomas Friedman in his book, Hot Latin Crowd. He said, government sets rules, rules shape markets, and markets give scale. And in this economy, we do need markets that give scale right now for jobs. Compostable bags actually create greater economic value for something that we already have and makes it more attractive for the private sector to invest and expand. So material that we've been collecting anyway, which has low value, like yard waste, which has plastic in it, has a higher value when it doesn't have plastic in it, and so it's more attractive to end markets, people are willing to pay for it, and the private sector instead of government is willing to get into the business. Some of you may have been at the One Minnesota conference we had at the Humphrey Institute about a month ago, and one economic development expert talked about the need to develop clusters where you have industries that are all related to the same topic that are located closely together, everything from manufacturing to the arts. And here we have an example of a bioplastics cluster. We have several manufacturers that were into corrosion inhibitors as a business, but then they got into the issue of bioplastics. And so they're trying something new that meets a societal need. In the case of NatureWorks, which was started by Cargill, they make polylactic acid from corn. And they have been making this kind of film plastic for some years. So they're actually adding it to their core competency, which is agricultural commodities. The rationale for the bill, which is to require in the 7-county metro that if you use a disposable plastic bag for yard waste, that you should use a compostable bag, is because bad compost is a liability for all of us as taxpayers. Clean compost is an asset that will attract employers and investment. Retailers are also looking for direction. They've been asked by composters to carry compostable bags, and the response is, we don't think people will buy them, and so we won't carry them unless it's required. And so they're looking for some direction and consistency. Section 2 has to do with truth in labeling. There are some inferior products being sold as biodegradable, and the Biodegradable Products Institute actually uses the ASTM standard, the D6400 mentioned in the bill, to make sure that only bags that have that ASTM certification could be sold as being biodegradable and compostable. I've gotten a lot of questions from legislators as I talked about this bill, such as, I have a cart for my yard waste. Are you saying that I have to get rid of my cart and get a bag? And the answer is no. Rolling carts are fine. The contents are poured into a hauling packer truck and then they're taken away. In some communities, you have craft paper bags for yard waste. Those are fine. Those are compostable. It's just that if you had a plastic bag, it would need to be compostable. I've had questions from people who use big bags to reuse, where they go and drive to yard waste sites, pour stuff out of their trucks, and take the bag home. Does that work? Oh, absolutely. As long as you don't leave your non-degradable bag at the yard waste site, you'd be just fine. And someone asked me, well, won't this solve the problem of plastic bags in landfills, which haven't been able to break down? My answer is no. There isn't really any resource conservation value to having a compostable bag in a landfill. That material is going to be there a long time, so it's not really the focus of this bill. Someone asked, don't I do this already? And the answer is, well, if you live in Dakota County, the answer is yes. Dakota County has had an ordinance in place for probably 15 years requiring biodegradable bags for yard waste. Another legislator asked if we should focus on home composting bins instead of trucking around organic waste, and the metro counties have been very aggressive in distributing compost bins. I have three of them, much to my wife's chagrin. But however, in the fall, in particular in the spring, the volume of leaves and grass is too heavy to really put in a carton, so you need to have it hauled away. I was asked if we'd have enough bags, and the bag manufacturers told me that yes, they can produce all the bags that are necessary for the bill. And then finally, the question about cost. These compostable bags are more expensive than regular plastic bags, but they're competitive with the paper craft bags. But I would argue that since haulers are going to pay less to get rid of the organic waste because it has the compostable stuff in it, they, in theory, would pass on the savings to you. So you kind of come out as a wash. Mr. Chair, that was it. I do have some folks who could testify if people have experts or particular questions that I can answer, including some of the bag manufacturers and compost site operators. I think there is one person who wants to testify about the bill also from the city of Minneapolis, and but I don't know if people had questions for...
Sure. Any questions before we move on to the testifiers? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gardner, where does it say in the bill that if you enter a composting site with regular plastic bags that you won't be breaking the law? Where does it say that if you're going to enter the facility but leave again with the bags that you'll be okay?
Well, this was, Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, this is some discussion with some of the counties about how to do this. You know, in Ramsey County, where I live, people have these big reusables and they pour them out, take them with them. And I don't want to prohibit that by any means, but if you leave it there, that's the problem. And we're trying to find just the right language. If you look at the author's amendment and kind of paste it together, it should say, after September 1, 2009, any plastic or bag containing yard waste delivered to a yard waste composting facility and not removed from a yard waste compost facility, blah, blah, blah. So that may look a little confusing. Did that make sense, Representative McNamara?
Well, I got to find that. I apologize.
Oh, that's better, right?
Yeah, A1 amendment.
Okay.
And here I would...
Would there be a penalty? What would be the penalty for leaving bags or containers behind?
Mr. Chair, there is no penalty specified here. The only penalty I have is if somebody's selling a bag in Minnesota that is labeled improperly, and that'll be the subject of Representative Dabney and Representative Mueller's committee.
Okay.
But I don't think we ought to be chasing people around about bags, you know, and writing tickets up necessarily. So.
Okay. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, Representative Gardner, I think my other questions, maybe you want me to do those of the operators. I just have a question about the current technology used to remove the plastic bags in the process now. I don't know if you want to address some of those, some of the different composting facilities. I'm wondering if you could let us know of the different technology folks are using to remove the plastic currently and where we're at with that.
Representative Gardner,
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I could describe it to you in very broad terms, but knowing of your technical interest in this area, maybe I could have someone from Carver County answer that and some of the debagging technologies. Would that be all right? I know that there is equipment that will sort of shred the bag open, and then this is kind of a cylinder where you can get the plastic to separate out, but the major complaint of the composters that I've talked to is that you never really get it all out, and that's been my experience having worked in that in the recycling industry for about a decade.
Okay.
So if you could just say your name and your title.
Welcome. Yeah, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Brandon Lightsoul, RW Farm. We currently have the City of Minneapolis contract, which is bags, yard waste that comes to our site, and we use a debagging trowel to take the bags out pre-grinding them. So you get all the bags plus the residual that are in the bag, because there's still about 2% of material that comes in a bag that maybe the husband or the wife put into their trash can thinking it was their yard waste. You know, it was their household garbage. That's why you get it ahead of time. There's some compost operators that'll grind the bag ahead of time and try to get the plastic out later. With that, you increase the contamination in the pile, and you can never fully screen off the plastic, as you can see in those pails. So we try to debag it and take the material out. The problem with that is about 35% of our budget for a particular contract that's a bag budget is spent on solely taking the bag out of the product. So if we were able to not have to go through that process, we could forward that tipping fees on to the hauler, put forward them on to the consumer or to the city and the municipality and so on.
Mr. Chair, I know how irritating it is to get like 10 letters of support in your packet that you look for about 2 seconds. So I just ask staff to just hand out some of the vendors who actually use this material have got some support letters describing some of the technical details, but I didn't want to burden you with too much paper, but if you can, that might help answer some of your questions.
Do you have enough for everyone?
I made 3 copies. We get so much paper, I thought it was too much.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, I apologize. I missed your name.
Brandon.
Okay. Your last name, sir?
I'd like to go.
Okay. If you could... come on, Hackmark. Give me a hard time. I'm going to pass, sir. Thanks. It's been a long day. If you could tell me, do you know how the fact that you have to pay more for the recycling efforts because you have to debag it, how that would relate to the additional cost of the bags for the consumer?
Initially, I think with the whole debagging process, from start to finish, if you're able to supply a perfect material to a consumer, your end product value is going to go up. In retrospect, the people that are using this material, if they know it's a compostable bag, that breaks down to 100% capacity, the value that you're going to add to your product over the start to finish ratio would increase. So I think that's where your value would most best be served.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, did you follow my question? My question is, currently we have a system to remove the bags. You're using the system that you're physically taking them out of the bags. My question is, my experience with the bags are extremely expensive. There's the whole logistics involved with getting the consumer to use them. The reality is, I don't know how well they're going to really be used. Consumers aren't going to get it. They're still going to use the other ones. The frustration is going to be, you're going to have the old plastic intermixed with the new plastic, and you're going to end up debagging it potentially anyway. I'm wondering, what is the cost difference in the bags that we're going to be dealing with and the cost to the consumer relative to the current process that we're debagging? Do you follow my question, Representative Gardner?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I do understand, and to be honest, I couldn't give you a straight answer because I couldn't tell you exactly how much lower the price of the compostable bags will be as they're produced and distributed on a much larger scale if they were required. So the economies of scale would, we assume, see a reduction in price. The haulers are not always, they're private entities, and they may not tell you exactly how much my garbage bill might go down. I'd like to have them say it will go down by X amount because most of the hauling here in Minnesota is done by private entities, and so I don't have access to the data. I also don't know in each case at each yard waste site what the cost per ton would be that would be lower. It varies from site to site. So rather than make Mr. Eloff do all sorts of research in the dead of night to perform that calculus, I was trying to be consistent and just focus on the whole metro area, just on yard waste, and not get too ambitious beyond that. I would like to have a concrete answer to your question, but I am afraid I don't have one.
Okay. And Representative Purcell, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gardner, just going just a little bit different area here, and before I do, I want to tell you that we outstaters are generally pretty appreciative when things that are going on in the metro don't get put on us necessarily, but you got me curious about why this is limited to the metro and doesn't include the rest of the state.
Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, Minister, Representative Purcell, you know, recycling and composting is about volumes. I worked in recycling for 10 years, and you want to try something out, make sure it works, and instead of being so ambitious that you might set yourself up for failure. And I am always scolded by my colleagues from Greater Minnesota that I should confine my activities within the 7-county metro. So I thought that I wouldn't get too ambitious to go from border to border. And it's certainly how people treat yard waste in Greater Minnesota is probably different. You have more land, certainly, than I do in my suburbs. So I didn't profess to know what was good for you, but that's my answer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Is it Lastico?
Yeah, Lastico.
Lastico. Tell us, if you would, about your pricing structure or the ability. The natural business response, it seems to me, to this would be to provide differing pricing structures for those bags that you had to debag. You may charge them more and then charge them less for the compostable bags. And then at that point, wouldn't need government to intervene and control this thing and bring a huge mandate to the people. Can you tell us about what you've done and what the industry has done in that regard, and why don't we go in that direction?
Mr. Lysico?
Yes, sir. In retrospect to the tipping fees, is that what you're more asking about? Yeah, we currently have a sliding scale for bag yard waste or non-bag yard waste. They currently have that. The bag yard waste, get into your number that you were maybe searching for before, it's about $7.50 a ton to pull the plastic out pre-grinding the material. And once you grind that material, and process it to a finished grade compost with the plastic in it, a lot of the stuff is unsaleable. You know, it may go into the taconite trail ditch somewhere and used for some type of mulching or bedding, but there's still a litter issue along with contamination in that product. So for us, the value is that it either has to be a biodegradable compostable bag or no bag at all to make it make sense. And some of the studies that we've done in Carver County is here with me today, but they've gone to compostable bags. They're available at all their local stores and markets. And as the demand has gone up, they've seen a significant reduction in the price of the biodegradable bags. So they're able to make it comparable to the plastic bags they've used in the past.
Okay. Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Lysico, are you saying that if you provide those incentives for people to come in and maybe use the biodegradable bag on their own through a pricing structure that they will change behavior on their own without an oppressive government regulation?
I think without the government regulation or without a guideline go by, there won't be a change. If there's a guideline and there's education out there and you have the learning curve, initially you're going to get that co-mingled product where you're going to get maybe 50-50. But over the course of time, you should be able to reduce your residual percentage on plastic bags that enter the stream.
And I think another reason for the mandate is to set ourselves up to be a leader in the industry, which is developing these bags and to attract those types of businesses to Minnesota, send a signal to the rest of the country that we're open for business when it comes to these biodegradable types of bags. I don't know if you have anything to add. And I think, let's see, Representative Saylor, your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just like to say that I think Representative Gardner has a good bill. We definitely need to improve our composting, and the issues that he's addressing of contamination of other plastic bags are certainly an issue everywhere around the state. I also want to commend him for choosing to focus on the 7-county metro area at this time rather than the whole state. And the reason for that is because we do handle our solid waste differently throughout the state based on, you know, some of the volume issues and other issues that arise in rural counties. And I would just like to mention that in rural counties, primarily people are self-haulers. I mean, the solid waste or yard waste and compostable lawn clippings, etc., if they do come in to our facilities, they're primarily brought in by people themselves. We don't have haulers that go around and pick up yard waste as they do in the metro area. And so we have the self-hauler issue. And additionally, I spoke with a number of rather folks from rural counties. And currently, the systems that we have in place in rural Minnesota are not as high-tech as the composting systems that exist in the metro area. I've toured some of the systems here in the metro area where they actually have, you know, like silage bags, and the composting material goes in. And actually, what in order to make good compost, you have to bring everything up to temperature to about 140 degrees, and you need inputs of humidity and air to turn out a good quality compost. Most of the rural facilities, we do indeed have yard waste composting. We do compost, and it works fairly well. However, they are basically big piles, and they're turned over by the loader. So we don't have the capability at this time of doing the more high-tech. We're kind of low-tech out there. But and so one of the problems would be with some of the compostable bags there would simply be that those compost piles do not uniformly come to the 140-degree temperature, and it just operates a little bit differently. So, while I certainly support this bill, and I really appreciate the fact that we're going to, Representative Gardner is suggesting that we look at how this works in the metro area and then kind of move ahead. Because I agree, we shouldn't be wasting good soil. We should be turning it into compost, and I think that we will have those opportunities. But currently, the technology does not exist and in rural areas. Now, if we wanted to fund new technology coming to the rural areas, that would be swell, but that's probably not what we're doing today. So I just wanted to bring those issues up about some of the differences. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad there's actually a couple of people around here that know a little something about compost. Representative Gardner is someone who spent 30 years in an industry, and we've been using compost for about 25, started with the turkey manure, and today it looks very similar, but most of it is yard waste today. Unfortunately, I've never seen a container like the white plastic. The compost that we get today comes in truckloads, semi-loads, or whatever, and basically looks like what you had in a bag without the plastic. Today, industry's figured out how to deal with it. This is another case where we just want to make it tough for people to live in this state and have and promote business. Instead of just letting business do its thing, people do their thing, common sense prevail and do the system, whatever. We charge them $7.50 a ton if that's the way they're going to do it, or we allow Dakota County to do their thing and take it out, or we let technology do the whiff around, or they take the bags out that way. These bags are extremely expensive. They're cumbersome. Less people are going to use them. There's going to be confusion out here. This is a case of where we're just trying to be a nanny state, and we're going to make the metro do it, but not the outstate do it. I mean, realistically, we should just do it for the whole state then. Why shouldn't everybody have to do it? I mean, we don't need this. We're getting good compost today delivered without the bags. I mean, this is not 10, 20 years ago when it was a mess. That photo that you showed is not a current how it's done today. That may be where they deliver it before somebody was paid to debag it. That's not, I'm hoping you're not operating like that. It looks like it was from 10 years ago. This is just a case, again, where we're just going down and just nanny state, and I don't think this is necessary. We could get by without this under the current system.
And Gardner, did you want to respond?
Mr. Chair, thanks to Representative McNamara for the comments. I certainly was expecting something like that. I would just argue this is an issue of quality control, and I would argue that the technology has not been producing the compost in the quantities necessary to meet the markets that are out there. I certainly can appreciate the question about government involvement, but I, as a suburbanite who doesn't hunt and fish, I look at the game and fish legislation that we have, which specifies what kind of ammunition you can use and what days you can hunt and whether you can use lights and so on and to catch fish, and I would argue that we're very micromanaging as we relate to some of our resources for a reason, to conserve resources, and that's what we're doing here and trying to avoid a garbage in, garbage out situation with a material that has value for end markets. So I certainly appreciate the comments. I understand the perspective, and that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? Seeing none.
I didn't know if anybody else was going to testify.
Yes. And there was at least one other person, Susan Young from the city of Minneapolis, who did want to testify.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my name is Susan Young. My official title is Director of Solid Waste and Recycling for the City of Minneapolis, but most folks know me as the Trash Lady, the Graffiti Maven, and the Shopping Cart Diva. In Minneapolis, I'm responsible for making sure that our garbage is appropriately taken care of. We have one of the finest recycling programs in the nation. We have a solid material collection program that is standard for all of our customers so that nobody from Minneapolis has to illegally dump stoves, refrigerators, and other things in rural areas. We run a yard waste composting program that y'all here took care of. Excuse me, I need to check my numbers for last year. 21,000 tons of yard waste. All of that yard waste was either bundled as brush or was delivered in plastic bags. This is some of our finished compost, which was properly debagged. Proper debagging does not leave a lot of trash and residue and garbage in good, well-finished compost. In Minneapolis, we would hope that you would not prohibit us from doing the right thing that we do. We have a fully integrated solid waste management system in Minneapolis that is, quite frankly, envied in much of the nation. We're the only city in the nation that collects electronics through a partnership with Hennepin County from our customers at no additional charge, at no additional fuss, strain, or muss, and it's an innovative program. We've begun a source-separated composting pilot program because I expect that in the future it will be more and more important for us to separate out organic materials. This pilot program is a composting program where we are collecting source-separated organics, food waste, paper towels, or all sorts of things. Right now we have a partnership with Hennepin County where we are composting those source-separated organics. Mr. Lexico is correct. We did ask for a proposal for those organics with no plastic bags, only compostable bags, for the composting of those from RW Farms. The price that they gave us for that was exactly the same as the price that they gave us for our yard waste and brush to be delivered in plastic bags. With our composting program down in Linden Hills neighborhood, what we're finding is that compostable bags are around 84 cents a piece. Plastic bags are around a little less than 2 cents a piece. There is a significant price difference between plastic and compostable. There are some labeling issues, and I'm very happy that Representative Gardner's bill is going to be dealing with the labeling issues so that truly compostable bags, not just degradable bags, will be sold to customers as compostable bags. I believe that the bill, as unamended, is trying to solve a problem that really doesn't exist. Again, in Minneapolis, we require that our customers bundle their brush and put their yard waste in plastic bags. We use the plastic bags, and we will allow people to use compostable bags, but what we found is that if you put some brush or some sticks or some rose thorns in a compostable bag, they have a tendency to rip along a longitudinal line. And so what that does is it sort of creates a mess in our alleys. If you pick it up and the thing rips and it goes all over the place. Yes, we try and sweep everything up, but we're human and we're not quite perfect. We found that the plastic bags are a more cost-effective method both for our customers and for our crews in our collection process. Right now, Organic Technologies Incorporated and RW Farms jointly have our contract for composting our yard waste. OTI is debagging the materials using a firm called Emerge. Emerge is a North Minneapolis company that recruits persons from halfway houses, persons that have been incarcerated, persons that are down on their luck, persons that have, do not have a job history. They're paying them living wage, $10 to $16 an hour jobs, to do the debagging of yard waste. This is a process that is a lateral cutting of bags and debagging instead of the typical old-style vertical mashing and slashing that did give a very poor separation of plastic bags from the yard waste material. The new technology that Organic Technologies is using before they deliver material to RW Farms is a much better technology, and with the use of that technology and difficult-to-employ persons who are now being employed in North Minneapolis are getting jobs and are getting a living wage. We are taking care of something that so that it is not a problem, and we don't need the bill to address this. In addition, we have searched for and have found markets for the plastic bags. We're working with Consolidated Container Corporation, who is also working with Minneapolis, on our all-plastics collection pilot program, and we are finding good markets for the plastic bags using the Organic Technologies debagging method. If the amendment to the bill that states that bags must be removed would include the removal of bags through a debagging process, then we would heartily support the bill. That would allow folks the most flexibility. If folks want to bring compostable bags, if folks want to use compostable bags, they would be obviously free to do that. On the other hand, if we have a technology that does a good job of removing bags, and we have a cost-effective program for yard waste management that depends on debagging programs and provides jobs to folks, then that would also be true, be lawful. So both situations would be best. That would keep plastics and poorly debagged plastics out of compost if the amendment to the proposed law does mean that a debagging operation would be allowed. Having spent some time over the last 8 years looking at the various compostable bags, new bags, old bags, one of the issues with compostable bags is during the breakdown process, you have the same problems that the old plastic bags have. They don't just dissolve. They tend to break down in long tatters and ribbons. Every compostable bag breaks down a little bit differently. Some require heat, some require sunlight, some require more or less moisture. If the compostable bags require heat and they're on the outside of the pile, they're not going to get that kind of heat. If they require a lot of moisture and you're in a dry condition, a fall leaf sort of condition, you don't have as instant a breakdown. Paper towels break down and are compostable too, but during that process, they do flutter, they do create litter, they can be a problem. The trick is managing your operation, doing a good job of managing the products that you have in both an environmentally protective and cost-effective manner. That's what we're looking for. I would respond to any questions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Young, and interesting testimony. As far as the technology you employ to separate the bags, is that being used in throughout the metropolitan area, or are you an anomaly? Is it something that is not widely used? You talked about the old technology where it would, you know, kind of grind up bags rather than cutting them laterally, as you said. I was just wondering if you have any information as far as the other areas and how they're, what kind of technology they're using, if they're still using the old technology, if they're employing the technology you use.
Mr. Chairman, Organic Technologies, Inc. has invested in relatively new technology. I cannot speak for every single debagging operation, but the technology that they are employing now on the bags under contract to the city of Minneapolis is a technology that is relatively new and has done a very good job of debagging.
Okay. Thank you. And we have Representative Cornish.
I had a question for the author more than if they're done with the witness, then
go ahead.
I was wondering if you'd be interested in a small oral amendment, Representative Gardner. On line 1.17, change 2009 to 2509. That would give us 500 years to study this to see if it really does make an inch of soil or not. And then we'd have to work on 123 line to put it into a study. But what do you think about that?
Representative Gardner.
Billy, Representative Cornish, and I'm not going to entertain your motion.
Okay. Any other questions for the author or for Ms. Young? Representative Drazkowski.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Ms. Young, could you kind of elaborate a little bit more about the ability for the markets to work in that whole industry?
Ms. Young.
Mr. Chair, Representative, when the city of Minneapolis does much of our work with city employees, but we have several outstanding public-private partnerships. On a regular basis, we go out for requests for proposals where we ask potential vendors, what would you charge for a variety of things? Last year we went out for a request for proposals to handle bagged Minneapolis yard waste and brush, to handle strip sweepings and leaves, the fall large leaf sweepings that we have, and to potentially handle source-separated organics, the pilot program that I'm working now that I expect within 5 years we will try to take citywide. That is the way that we test the markets on a very regular basis. The city of Minneapolis can only have a contract that lasts 5 years before we must renew it, or we must go for our city council. My council is pretty strong about making sure that I test the market to make sure that we're getting the best price for our customers. When we went out for an RFP this year, the Minneapolis yard waste and the Minneapolis source separated organics proposals, the proposal that came in was the same price. Realizing that source separated organics, and I have one of my source separated organics flyers here, would have to come in only in compostable bags, because that is the way that the Hennepin County program that we are cooperating with right now is working.
Okay. I'm going to let you. I'm the trash lady. I'm not the tech lady. I'm sorry.
Thank you for that. Okay. We are providing parts for that. The prices that we were that were given to us in proposals for source separated organics with compostable bags and for our yard waste were the same. Now, those of you that have flown into the St. Paul Minneapolis Airport realize that Minneapolis is a very strongly treed and brushed city. We've got 120-year-old lilacs out there. So the Minneapolis yard waste has a much higher percentage of brush and tree trimmings than yard waste from a suburban area that do not have the very large trees and the long-lived brush and the vines that Minneapolis does have. So our yard waste has a bit of a premium associated with composting it, because you have to chip the brush. The carbon to nitrogen ratios on brush are not as good as they are on lawn clippings that you would see from some suburbs. So basically what happens is that our market ability is affected by the material that we have. What we saw, though, was that even a source-separated organic with an only compostable bag collected in the green compost carts that you see on the screen, the composting price for that was the same in the proposal as the bag yard waste was the plastic that would need to be debagged by organic technology. There was not a price difference for composting a material that has compostable bags. I'm sorry, sir, did that answer your question?
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Young by the office? Thank you, Ms. Young. Appreciate your testimony, and I don't know, Representative Gardner, if there were any others that you'd like
that, to... two people who wanted to chip in.
Sure. If you'd want to...
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barry Tilley. I'm here representing the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, which is a solid waste board made up of Hennepin, Ramsey, Dakota, Anoka, Washington, and Carver County in the metro area. The coordinating board administers the variety of solid waste programs for the PCA, as the PCA does in the remainder of the state. The Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board has this bill on our legislative agenda in support. The counties in the metro area are working to try to improve the quality of the end product of compost when it's done, so that it has a value, that it's not disposed of or landfilled. The Seven County metro area has a landfill ban for yard waste and landfills, and the only two MSW landfills in the metro area are in Dakota County, and that ban's been in place for a number of years. But yard waste can still be disposed of in landfills outside the metro area, and the coordinating board has no control over where the yard waste goes. We are also working to include source separated organics as part of the composting stream. And the future of composting and reducing what goes into landfills is to improve the quality of the product so it has some real value at the end, which then reduces the overall cost of dealing with organics as we go along. The coordinating board has worked a variety of demonstration projects in schools all over the region to collect the food waste from the school cafeterias along with the paper products. The end result product of compost is better if you use a combination of yard waste and source separated organics. Representative Gardner talked about the backyard bins. The coordinating board does distribute those bins to citizens throughout the region. We subsidize the cost to encourage that, or we have in the past, and there's a large number of those bins in operation, and it's a very popular program among citizens. But overall, we feel the compost products are going to be better if we take the plastic bags out of the waste stream. Thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chilley. And what counties, again, do you cover?
Of all of seven metro counties except Scott.
Okay.
And they formerly were members and withdrew, and they may be members again in the future, but they are not right now.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Thiessen, you have a question?
That's okay.
Okay. Any other questions at all for Mr. Tilley? Yes, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tilley, how does Dakota County do it different than the other counties?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, the Dakota County Board imposed a ban on use of compostable bags within Dakota County, or non-compostable. We require, if you're going to bag your yard waste in Dakota County, it has to be in a compostable bag. And that's been, as Representative Gardner said, for at least 15 years.
And
we have not had any complaints from that I remember. I live in Dakota County. Have since 1973. I have not heard one complaint about the compostable bags myself.
And as far as cost is concerned, I've heard some testimony about the difference in cost. Is there a significant difference in the cost of the disposal in Dakota County as opposed to those that do allow bags that are not compostable?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of that. I just don't know. I can ask.
I would assume if there's no complaints that the cost differential couldn't be too serious. But any other questions for Representative Duszkowski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tilley, this question might be a bit naive, but in Wabasha County, if we've got yard waste, we burn it. Do we have state law prohibiting that, I'm assuming, in all the metro counties, or what can you tell me about that? What kind of regulations have we put on you that has created this problem in the first place?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you cannot burn yard waste in the metro area. Burning leaves, I assume, is what most of that is. That's not allowed in the metro area and hasn't been for a lot of years. It's a major air quality problem. I remember the days when it was burned. If you can imagine, there's nearly 3 million people in the metro area. If they all burned their leaves, it would be a very smoky place.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just curious, if one county has had this ban or requirement for 15 years and the other six counties in the metro area haven't, has it been that big an issue over the years?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, not every county has compost sites, and the region as a whole, one of the things that the coordinating board has looked at is reducing the need to site more landfills. There's a finite amount of space left in landfills, and by diverting yard waste out of landfills, the existing ones are going to last a lot longer. Not every county has a room to do a major composting site that's away from people, and so that's the primary reasons we've gone in that direction.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Tilley. And we do have another person who would like to testify. You could state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Susan Hubbard, and I'm from Eureka Recycling. We're Minneapolis-based. We have 100 employees, and we provide waste reduction, recycling, and composting services. I just wanted to bring to light a couple of things that haven't come up, and I think most of the testimony has covered the issues, but one of the things that's clear is that there's some confusion about the fact that composting is a growing issue, and that what we're discovering is that through composting, we can address the challenges that we're facing with global warming, and that's why this comes before the group now, is because more and more people are composting at home and businesses, and we're providing services to those people, so we see the growth there. I also wanted to state for the record that all of our customers, and we have customers that are huge industries, and we have individual homeowners, and we have all-size businesses and lots of restaurants and all different customers that are composting their food scraps and their food waste, and they're very happy to purchase these bags, because what they understand is that what you cannot see in the compost is much more dangerous than what you can see. And so although you may be looking at compost that is in a bag that you can't see the plastic pieces, the real problem is the plastic that is in the environment, particularly in our soil and in our water and our air, that we cannot see, the nanoparticles and the particles that are just invisible to the eye, that they've now proven are affecting human health and the health of the planet and the health of all the beings on the planet. And so I would challenge to say that just because you can't see the plastic in the bag in front of you, it isn't there, and that one way to assure that is to, of course, change the guidelines so people understand what they're buying, but also to take a policy stand to say that we don't support composting with plastic bags because we don't support putting into the food chain plastic, and that plastic was never meant to be food. And I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hubbard. And any questions at all for Ms. Hubbard? So, according to your testimony, you would be saying that the bag that was coming around, which, the last bag that we saw, where it was done by debagging, that there's still particles in there that are not visible to the eye, but still affect that compost, and may make it less marketable as well. I mean,
I've been in the industry for 20 years, and right now for the past 8 years I've been running a company that provides these services at large events and all over the place, and we cannot guarantee to any customer that unless they use an compostable bag that there will not be plastic in the product. There's no debagging technology that I'm aware of in this industry that I've been in for 2 decades that assures that there is not plastic in the remaining compost and what we think is compost.
Okay. So the compost from those materials that were debagged would not be as marketable either as those that were found with compostable bags. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hubbard. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you for your testimony. And anyone else that would like to testify? Okay. Representative Gardner.
Just some closing comments. Members, I know that the concept of compost is comes across as a little weird sometimes, and I knew that going in, and I know that there's some concepts here that kind of broach activities that you do every day that you don't think about that have an effect downstream. So the reason this is coming around is because we do have a quality control issue. We do have an opportunity to add value to something that we're already collecting that has very low value, which will help increasing economic activity in Minnesota. So I appreciate the comments. I certainly was anticipating some of that, but I certainly would like to ask for your support. And I guess I'll renew the motion or move that House File 403 as amended be recommended to pass and to the Committee on Commerce and Labor.
Okay, Representative Gardner renews his motion to that House File 403 be recommended to pass and referred to Committee on Commerce and Labor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails and bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Gardner.
Thank you.
Technology, I know. Got it. Welcome, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members.
And I guess before we begin, I'll move the bill. I move House File 60 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance, intending to send it to Environment and Natural Resources Finance. So, Representative Hanson to the bill. Representative Hamilton to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just briefly, this bill will establish or looks to establish the Des Moines River Valley Trail as recognized as a state trail and would require the DNR to work with Friends of Jackson County Trails on planning and developing a trail. Right now, there's a very nice trail system through Jackson and the surrounding areas, and they're looking at connecting with the trail down in Iowa that goes to State Park down in Iowa, just right over the border, and then also into Murray County, and I believe that trail is up next on the agenda. So, Mr. Chair, what I have, I do have a member here, the chairman of the Friends of Jackson County Trails, Mr. Chuck Lutz, to talk on this as well. He could provide some testimony, please.
Okay. Mr. Lutz, is it?
Yep. Okay. My name is Chuck Lutz. It's spelled L-U-C-H-T. And I'm chairman of the Friends of Jackson County Trails.
Okay. Please continue.
Okay. We've been in an organization since 1998 that has been applying for federal grants through the enhancement program to build trails in Jackson County. And we've got several trails around Jackson now, and we've also just finishing up a trail from the Iowa border to our county parks in south of Jackson. And next summer we'll be having a big celebration because we heard it's one of the few interstate trails between Iowa and Minnesota, if any others. And we're just looking at trying to work with the DNR and possibly changing some of our small little trails, and they meet the federal guidelines, and make it part of the state trail system going up to the Casey Jones Trail.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions at all for Mr. and is it Mr. Loot?
Yes.
Yes. I'm pronouncing it correct. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Loot, what type of efforts have there been put forward to fundraise for this trail locally?
Mr. Loot.
Okay. We've been doing fundraising all the time since 1998. We work with the county commissioners. They help supply if it's outside the city limits. And then we've held in the city limits, the city of Jackson has helped construct our trail. They provide the local match to the federal funds. And we've been setting trails aside. I've got maps here, but they were starting to be used before we even had them finished, in most of the cases in Jackson. A co-worker of mine now has lost, I think he's getting close to 100 pounds because he gets out and walks. He's volunteering to clear the snow from the trails next year. This year we kind of got caught off guard and they can't use them, but when we started we were going to have them for cross-country skiing, but there's such a demand and such a usage for these trails that one of the other members of the community cleaned them, and now we've got another volunteer that's going to help clean the trails within the city of Jackson.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Mr. Lutz, I wasn't asking what other government agencies or sources you've gone to and asked them for government money. I was asking those people who are interested in putting this trail together, have they gotten their wallets out, or have there been fundraisers put forward? I think a lot of us see these trails going up and will maintain that if they truly are a good thing and they have the type of demand that you have so eloquently expressed, the people will get their wallets out and pay for them, but we continue to see people come to government for these instead. And the actions of the people sometimes don't seem to match the actions of the efforts to fund them. So I'm wondering, have you gone to the people and asked them to get their wallets out? Have you had the bean cookout? And is that an ongoing effort over time, or are you just coming here today?
Actually, we're not asking for money.
No problem.
This is the first time. this we've had actually an estate give us $25,000. Or $50,000, $25,000 went to the city, $25,000 went to the county. That estate went, we put it with the Minnesota Parks and Trails with their fund, and we do collect money. We have the lawyers in town make it available if they want to give estates. We have the pork cook-off, our cook time. We had a pork sandwiches last year one time. We have, in fact, my committee's meeting right now to plan what we're going to do this year. Besides, August 1st, we're having a celebration with the Dickinson County Trails Association where we'll have a bike ride and a cookout and a few other things where we'll send out invitations to Representative Hamilton and a lot of other people that we'll invite them down for our open house because we're proud of our trails. We've been working very hard. We do collect money from the people, also on that. So.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, they pay big bucks when I show up as well. So I'm just teasing. But no, there are fundraisers. There are local fundraisers as well. And like you said, there's individuals that have left funds for this purpose. And there's huge community support. It is widely used. And again, and this is to allow us to continue with the planning and to hook up with the trails down in Iowa because it's pretty close to the Spirit Lake in the Okoboji region as well, and then subsequently over to Murray County.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the biking on these trails. So are these blacktop tarred trails?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Okay. Any other questions before? We do have one other testifier as well. So, Mr. Rubis, is it? I'd like to testify.
Yeah, my name is Craig Rubis. I'm a former county commissioner in Jackson County. Actually, I helped Chuck and this group get started about back in the 90s. We always wanted trails in our county but didn't know how to get going. And I served on our Area Transportation Partnership Program in District 7 and saw that there were some federal funds available. So this group got together and we started a grassroots organization to put the trails together. And so we did get started with federal enhancement dollars and matching by the county and the city and private funds. And so also I've been working with Jackson County but also with Cottonwood County, where we'd be going through there some trails in Cottonwood County, looking at the whole system. So I came along today to help support Chuck and his proposal to look to tie these trails together. You know, the representative asked before about the PAC dollars, and I know when we first started this program back in the early 90s and got the money, well, when it was getting closer to put the trails together, I took a lot of flack as a commissioner about why are we spending money on trails and not on bridges and roads and things like that. Well, if you're familiar with enhancement dollars, those are federal dollars that come through the DOT that are used for trails and for museums and things like that. So after we put the trails together, like Mr. Lutz said before, we had people that were walking behind the blacktop machine. That's how they were really sold themselves. So we're here just looking at getting designation, and we will be working in the future for fundraising and things like that, because they are used a lot in our area. And I've always been involved in economic development issues, and as many of you know, in many parts of the state, trails are helped to develop your economy. So thank you.
Mr. Rubis, thank you. And we all know it does take usually a variety of sources to fund such endeavors. I certainly see that you sought out a variety of different sources here. Mr. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the gentleman there, just to clarify here, I mean, you guys do pay taxes down there in Jackson County, eh? I think it's okay to come here and talk to us.
Chairman, just for the record, we do pay taxes in Jackson.
Thank you. Any other questions for Representative Hamilton or the testifiers? Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this would be to Representative Hamilton or the testifiers, but I was just curious, does your trail go through any lands that are county forest lands or state forest lands that are subject to logging, or is this pretty much along an old railroad grade? And I'm sorry if you already addressed that and I was out coughing. I'm sorry if I missed that, but I was curious.
Mr. Lutz?
As far as the forest land there, the Cottonwood State Park is, you know, some oak savanna type, and right now we're looking at working with the DNR and see what their ideas are to see where they should go. Today, it goes along the road. It goes got permission from the U.S. Fisheries and Wildlife to go some of their land down to down to Spirit Lake, so we can connect up with Iowa this next year. We're working with different programs, different organizations, different government entities to help expand the trail. But forest as far as itself, we're pretty agricultural down there. There's not a lot of forest areas, except riverbanks and that type of thing.
Yeah. Any other questions? Seeing none, any final comments at all, Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know the time's getting late, so I ask for your support.
Thank you. So I will renew my motion that House File 60 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance, again, and then on to, and recommending that it go on to Environment and Natural Resources Finance. So, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you, Representative
Chair
Hamilton.
Committee.
Next, we have Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome, Representative Magnus. And I will move House File 230 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I don't know where Representative Hamilton came up with the idea that they can hook onto our trail, but maybe we'll have to work something out with that. I don't know. But anyway.
You want to entertain an amendment?
I have to do an amendment if it gets the next committee. I'm here representing folks back home that support the Casey Jones Trail, Mr. Chairman and members, and that trail is one of the earliest that was dedicated in statute back in, I think, 1971 to establish the start of that trail, and we've added on to it a couple of times. And I'm here asking to add on a section that would go down into Rock County, add another county to it, and go down to a state park, and then on to Laverne, and then on to a county park in Laverne. And basically that would run the trail then from just south of Laverne through Pipestone, up to Slayton, through Lake Chetek, and then up to a little house in the prairie, Walnut Grove. So basically it's a simple request, Mr. Chairman. No money today, or we'll get that from my locals when we
do that. Are there any questions for Representative Magnus? Anybody that wants to testify, or do you have anyone who wants to testify? Okay. Seeing none, I will renew the motion that House File 230 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. And again, that also will be intended to go to Environment and Natural Resources Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Member.
And with that, meeting is adjourned.